afternoon again, everyone. Chad Holmes on the Chad Holmes Show here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230. Online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCR. We've made it to the middle of the work week. It's a hump day Wednesday, a bit cooler than it was yesterday, but nothing like going on down in the southeastern part of the state. Some severe weather actually today. Pretty calm here in central Wisconsin. To find out what's going on weather-wise, we're joined again from weatherology by meteorologist Ray Miller. Ray, good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. As you mentioned, it was a busy start to the afternoon down in southeast Wisconsin around the Milwaukee metro area. Multiple reports of brief tornado touchdowns and some moderate wind damage. Quite a few tree limbs and power lines knocked down, particularly in areas really right across the city of Milwaukee for the most part. Those storms have now moved out over Lake Michigan and weakened. They're moving away from us. We'll see sunny skies developing as we head into the afternoon hours, but not much improvement in temperatures. High is holding steady in the upper 50s with west winds at 10 to 20. Cloudy skies returning tonight and a couple of stray showers. Not really looking for widespread rainfall, but some hit and miss showers with a low of 37 and west winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Cloudy tomorrow with a few showers and a high of 46. Some patchy showers Friday as well with a high of 44. Should be dry as we head into the weekend, but still cool temperatures. Cloudy Saturday, high of 46. Cloudy Sunday with a high of 44. In the Weatherology Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller.
Wow. I guess we have to live on the memories of yesterday's middle 70s because it truly is turned into fall. And it looks like as you went through that forecast, it's going to be pretty consistent here for the next week or so, isn't it?
Yeah, I really don't see any change, at least to the early part of next week. And when we do get to Monday and Tuesday, if we do have a change, it's likely to be even cooler rather than warming up. So yeah, those 70s, a fond memory, and they may be that for quite some time now.
Okay, Ray, well, thanks for the info. We'll talk again tomorrow.
I'll see you then.
Right now in Wausau, here at our studios on East Wausau Avenue, it is 60 degrees with a few clouds out there. Not too bad. It's actually warmed up pretty nicely here this afternoon. Winds out of the west at 14 miles per hour, gusting as high as 22 miles per hour. The dew point is 39, relative humidity of 46%. The barometer at 29.52 inches and a visibility of 10 miles. Time is 3:09. Something I want to actually touch on. Last night on Channel 9, WAOW-TV, there was a story about Owen Withee High School football and how they're not eligible to play for the 8-player playoffs despite being undefeated and ranked number 3 in the state. And saw all sorts of comments on social media about let them play, let them play. The problem is on a number of different levels, and I wanted to kind of touch on this. I'm going to touch on it with Paul Nowitzki tonight on our big high school sports show as well. But well, number one, it stinks that a terrific team that would make the 8-player playoffs even better won't compete. I get a chance to see a lot of 8-player football with the Newman Cardinals, the defending state champs, and having a team like Owen Withee would be fantastic in the postseason, make for much better competition. But that's not the issue here. And the story kind of misses the point. From what I read in the story, the facts are wrong. And that leads to a lot of the comments as well. The story indicates that Owen Withee did not play a varsity schedule in 2019. The fact is, they played a full varsity schedule. So then they forfeited their 2020 varsity schedule because of numbers, not 2019. The reason that's important, because the story indicates 2019, if that was the case, then they would be eligible for the playoffs. They would have served their two-year ban because there's rules involved when you switch over from 11-player to 9-player. And whether you like the rule or not, and I think really that we should get rid of the rule personally, but the two-year playoff ban did not start in 2020, but 2021 for Owen Withee. The ban is for last year and this year. The big problem is that the WIAA had sent Owen Withee a letter a couple of years back after this all happened saying that they would be eligible this year, but it was a mistake. It was a clerical error, they say, by somebody who's now retired from the WIAA. So it was very sloppy of the WIAA to send out the message to Owen Withee that they would be eligible this year, but they corrected it more than a year ago. So this is not something that just happened in the last week or something like that. They sent out the clarification because it's really straightforward. Owen Withee, with that piece of paper in their hand, decided to appeal. They appealed, and it was not overturned. They are still ineligible for the 8-player playoffs this year. the WIAA has to be better than that. This all could have been avoided if they would have had a, you know, done the job better. Just, you know, sending out a piece of bad information was wrong. But the rule is straightforward. Again, I have no issue with changing that rule, eliminating the wait period when a school has little choice to move to eight player, but the wrong info in the story did not help the understanding. And many comments made say that they should let them play. Absolutely, every consideration needs to give student athletes the chance to compete. However, what about the team that followed the posted rules that would be knocked out if the rule was not followed? Because Owen Withy would get a spot, somebody else would be knocked out. What about that team? What about letting them play? So again, I wish OW was in the playoff bracket. I wish the rule was changed so we'd have less questions about who's eligible and who isn't in eight-player playoffs. But the mistake by the WIAA corrected more than a year ago is not the reason Owen Withy isn't eligible. So again, I just found that to be an interesting story that a lot of comments have been made. Got to take a break. Katrina Shanklin coming up next here on Bull Falls Radio WXCO. Home show here on Bull Falls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, online at bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. With you until 4 o'clock, and then, of course, Devil's Advocate from 4 till 6, and I'll be back from 6 till 8 with Paul Davinsky for the big high school sports show here on Bull Falls Radio WXCO. Of course, we are just 27 days away from election night, November the 8th, election night here for the midterms in 2022. And one of the up-and-coming stars for the Democratic Party is Katrina Shanklin, representative out of Stevens Point, Portage County, does have a race, has the same opponent as 2 years ago, where she won by about 10 points. But again, nothing can be taken for granted. So a very important race for the Democrats as they try to avoid a supermajority in the state legislature. And had a chance to talk to Katrina Shanklin recently and started off by asking her about clean water. Clean water, an issue that I think that's very, very important here in central Wisconsin. You know, Representative, it's an issue that is so important, and yet sometimes you don't hear about these kind of issues where government has such an important role in helping in clean water. I mean, if you sit down right now, and of course we're in the midst of an election season, and you see what the issues are, sometimes it feels like the most important issues get put behind some of the issues that are the ones that touch nerves or try to get citizens angry along those lines. But this is the meat and potatoes of a lot of what you do, isn't it?
It absolutely is. My number one job is to connect constituents with resources, to listen to their problems, their ideas, their proposed solutions, and to work with them to fix their everyday problems. And I think in this case especially, I've been working on water quality issues for years and years in the legislature. And today, this morning, out in Amherst in my district at my community town hall, I met someone who first contacted me on this issue 5 years ago. She was very excited about this new program, and she and I had been talking about how many years I've been working on this issue and how the legislature, unfortunately, has been too far behind where the public needs them to be on it. I've been pushing for over and over again. This, in fact, has been my eighth try to open up the existing state well compensation grant program. And instead, what we did working with Governor Evers is we launched a new $10 million grant program utilizing federal funds. This is a one-time program, which means once the funds are expended and people who are eligible, including households and businesses, get up to $16,000 in reimbursement to replace, repair, or reconstruct their private well, or get a treatment system like reverse osmosis, once that money is gone, the legislature really needs to act, because we have an existing pot of money in the state's primary well compensation grant program that's been sitting there for years because few, if any, people are eligible, depending on the contaminant. And it's because, unfortunately, the requirements for that program are outdated. Many of the requirements come from the 80s or 90s, including the income limits, a livestock requirement, and that shows that government needs to act to support the people who can't drink their water. And I've been leading the charge on that in the legislature. I'm going to continue to do that. And in the face of obstruction or additional hurdles, I will find thoughtful and creative solutions to support my constituents and the people of our great state.
We're again talking to 71st Assembly District Representative Katrina Shankland of Stevens Point here on the Chad Holmes Show on Bow Falls Radio, 98, 9, and 1230. You said it twice in that last answer that, one, the legislature needs to act and government needs to act. It seems like that you'd have to say that when it comes to an issue like clean water. We've seen the clean water issue bubble up here in Wausau. We've heard about it in Rhinelander with PFAS and here in Wausau as well. The idea that important issues, you have to almost beg leaders within the legislature to either hold hearings or even discuss ideas. It's part of the system that is, to say it bluntly, is kind of broken, isn't it?
Well, what's been frustrating to me is seeing continued obstruction by some members of the legislature. I will say I work really hard to try to act in a bipartisan manner because that's what my district asks me for. They want results, and I deliver them. But at the end of the day, the obstruction has come from people like the Speaker of the State Assembly who refused to schedule, and the majority leader who refused to schedule this bill that I had this session for a vote. What's been most frustrating is knowing that I have a bill to fix this problem. I've had it and introduced it in the budget and as separate bills 7 total times. But at the end of the day, one Republican leader, either in the Senate or Assembly, failed to make it pass by not scheduling it. And I think when the people of Wisconsin find that out, where they know it's had support, it's had affirmative yes votes in both houses, but never at the same time, that's exceedingly frustrating for people who, you know, when you're brushing teeth tonight and think about the fact that if you're lucky enough to be able to drink the water from your tap, not everyone in Wisconsin can. And you're right, it isn't just because of nitrate or bacteria or lead, but also because of PFAS, which is becoming more and more prevalent as municipalities are testing for it now. And I do think government's number one job is to improve people's lives, or if they're not going to do that, then get out of the way. And in this case, we're not seeing bipartisan support for issues like and bills like the CLEAR Act, which would help us protect the people of Wausau and Rhinelander and La Crosse and Marinette from PFAS. And we need to do more of that work and make it less about which party leader in the assembly cares about and more about what the people of our state care about. And they want overwhelmingly clean drinking water.
Also, when it comes to major issues, sometimes it feels like the majority in Madison waits to react to issues, doesn't want to do anything until you almost have to do it. And I imagine part of the role of being a state representative for yourself, especially, is to look ahead, is to not get to the point where literally you have to do something, but to look ahead to try to make sure that there are certain issues that you try to make implemental fixes so we don't have a major problem at some point in the future. And it feels like when you're not in session very often, when you're not having hearings to discuss these ideas and other issues, that a lot of these issues ultimately will come in an emergency situation. And with the lack of, I would say that, the hearings especially, there's a danger of that. And probably a number of different issues, aren't there?
Absolutely. I think the more preventative we are and the more focused we are on thoughtful solutions that reduce or completely prevent or mitigate crises or emergencies, as you said, the better. And that means working together, listening to the experts, hearing from our constituents, researching proposals and ideas for solutions that other states might have brought forward, and coming up with Wisconsin-based solutions for these problems. I couldn't agree with you more. And that's something that I try to do as well, because I have constituents on this issue who say, thank you for this new $10 million grant program. I'm glad you're helping people get clean drinking water, but what are you doing to prevent the water from being contaminated in the first place? And so at this town hall today, I also presented on a bill I got signed into law this year after working on it last session, with a legislator who's a farmer. And the goal is to provide farmers with additional support to mitigate nitrogen leaching, which is what's causing some part of the nitrate contamination in our groundwater, which many people use as drinking water. And so we have a new pilot program that DECAP will be launching in the coming months, where farmers can apply to work with UW system researchers like the Center for Watershed Science and Education at UWC Point to lower their nitrogen leaching by looking at different practices for commercial fertilizer application. Fertilizer has doubled in the last year, so farmers are already very interested in making sure they're maximizing their yield while minimizing their input costs, right? Mm-hmm. And this program is an incentive program for farmers to work with a UW system researcher. Together, they would get $50,000 for on-farm research over two growing seasons. And we're going to take the best experiments, the best innovation, the best data and research that yields and use it for future prevention strategies. So I think we have to be looking at every issue, not just from a how do we stop the bleeding or how do we fix this immediate short-term problem, while also looking at the long-term, not just the next election cycle, mm-hmm. not just the next 2 or 4 years, but 10, 20, 30 years, generations down the road. And I think that means being collaborative, working together, listening, and really being attentive to each other's ideas while seeking out strategies that have worked in other places and making Wisconsin-based solutions.
Before we wrap up this topic of your new grant program with the contaminated private wells, for those folks who were not able to go to your town hall earlier today, what other information would they need to know right now? And I also see that the DNR is going to have a webinar for applicants coming up November 10th. But is there anything else that folks can find out more, because it does start today that the applications begin today and they continue until all the funds are gone. But once the funds are gone, the funds are gone.
Absolutely. So I would encourage people to apply and not wait for that webinar. I think that webinar will be helpful, but they can reach out to my office if they have questions. They should reach out to the Department of Natural Resources if they're not a constituent and have questions, as well as their legislators can hopefully provide information. What I would say is the DNR's website, Well Compensation Grant Program, has all the information they're going to need. And that website is dnr.wisconsin.gov/aid/wellcompensation.html. The other thing that people can do is just type in Well Compensation Grant Program in Google, and they can reach out to the DNR directly with any questions, and I'm happy to help constituents as well.
Terrific. Representative, we have to take a news break. Are you able to stick around for a few more minutes after the news break?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Terrific, and I never know what the schedule is like, so I don't want to hold you off too much, but we do have to take a bottom-of-the-hour news break, and then we'll come back and talk about some of the other issues. Actually, some news today that was broken by Governor Evers, talking about a new plan to increase shared revenue, something we've been talking about on this program with some of our local and county officials. I would like to maybe get Representative Shanklin's thoughts on that and just talk about a few other issues with Katrina Shanklin. We'll have more with the representative from the 71st Assembly District coming up here on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230 WXCO. Friday night, the Wausau West High School football team looks to clinch a share of the Valley Football Association Championship, playing host to crosstown rival DC Everest at Tom Field. Hear all the exciting action live on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230, online at bullfallsradio.com, and mobile devices by searching WXCO, starting with the pregame show at 6:40 and the opening kickoff at 7 p.m. Wausau West High School football on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230 is brought to you by the Cloverbell Credit Union, Wisconsin Valley Flag Football, Sun Printing, Varney Brothers Kitchen and Bath, Bob Look for State Senate, and the Wausau West Athletic Department. It's Wausau West hosting DC Everest in high school football Friday night, starting with the pregame show at 6:40 and opening kickoff at 7 p.m. on Bull Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230, bullfallsradio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO. happy to continue our conversation with 71st Assembly District Representative Katrina Shanklin, again representing Stevens Point and Portage County in the state legislature. And Representative Tony Evers, the governor of Wisconsin, announced the next budget to include $91.4 million increase for shared revenue to support statewide public safety. And I imagine that a lot of people are going to be very excited about this idea from the governor. I guess, number one, your thoughts on this announcement from the governor. Number two, what has to be done in order to make this idea a reality?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I am thrilled to hear this because I have been knocking many doors, talking to people across Portage County, and also talking to my local government leaders in my community about this issue for a long time. And we are seeing a tremendous need for additional shared revenue. There is a current budget surplus of at least $3 billion, and I believe by the end of the fiscal year, the projection is $5.3 billion in the state of Wisconsin. Meanwhile, we're hearing from local government leaders who are dealing with either budget cuts or cuts to services, as well as going to referendum to make up the difference. And I think it's important for people to know the history of levy limits in Wisconsin. So since 2005, Wisconsin has had property tax levy restrictions that limit the ability of local governments to increase their property tax levies annually. And because of those, the cities, municipalities, like villages and towns as well, are limited in the amount of money available to provide the services that we all count on. Think about things like water and sewer, road repair, snow removal, et cetera. And of course, that includes police, fire, and EMS. And people forget about that piece of it. So as we're seeing growing public safety needs across the state, we're seeing communities going to referendum just to fund their EMS, police, fire, and rescue because of the significant, in many cases, double-digit increase in calls for service while staffing levels have remained flat. So in the April election earlier this year, there were a number of communities across the state that went to referendum to fund police and fire and EMS services because without going to referendum, i.e. raising property taxes, they wouldn't be able to manage the increased first responder calls. So Wisconsin is the only state in the country that funds our local police and our fire and EMS services solely by property taxes. We're relying entirely on property taxes to fund public safety and our first responder calls. And as those calls go up, we need a better solution. So I think instead of relying on referenda, increasing shared revenue, which is the money that the state collects and things like income tax, sales tax, and sending it back to local municipalities, prevents a needless property tax hike, keeps people in their homes, and supports police, fire, and EMS that are seeing an increased number of calls for service. So this is the perfect solution. It's something I've been talking about for a long time as well, and it's very much welcomed by local government.
Again, we're talking to Katrina Shanklin, 71st Assembly District Representative, and you talk about, you said it, you've talked about this. You've had ideas. Another issue, you've had ideas. Before we talk about some of the other issues, it brings up the whole idea where I saw a story where almost no Democratic proposals are even getting hearings. What are you hearing? Why can't there be discussion on ideas?
Yeah, and I think we saw this as well in 2020 when the health committees never met throughout the pandemic, and people were kept asking the chairs of the health committees, why aren't you meeting? And the same way that people are asking, look, we have local municipalities clamoring for support, and the governor is listening, and instead of, you know, the state forcing them to raise property taxes, which no one wants to see, in order to manage that increased first responder call across the state, instead, he's listening to them and providing a solution. He's proposing $91.4 million in shared revenue increases. It's 4% in each year over current levels in that budget. But we need legislators to listen, and we need legislators to approve that budget next year. So I think hearing from constituents on this issue and responding is a key part of being in office, and the governor has done it. I am personally advocating as well, but you're absolutely right that, especially in the off year, as people call it, you know, in the year that there's a campaign season where there's an election, unfortunately, my colleagues in the majority choose to end session early and to campaign the whole time. And instead, I'm, you know, focusing on getting information about this new program I helped launch on clean water to my constituents. I held a town hall. I'm educating them and talking at county board meetings in the next couple weeks. But we need every legislator to do that. So in order to get more responsive public servants and legislators, we really need fair maps. And hopefully other people have talked about that too. When we have gerrymandered maps, unfortunately, some politicians and some parties are less likely to respond to their constituents and listen. But if we had fair maps, I think more people would be interested in working year-round, every day, for the people. And that, to me, is what government should be.
One of the big issues, and I imagine that when you first ran for this office back in 2012, that the idea that you'd be talking about an 1849 law on abortion 10 years later probably would never have crossed your mind, but it is now a major issue in the state of Wisconsin. The abortion law that was passed in 1849 is officially the law of this state. Your thoughts on what's happened in the past summer that's put this issue front and center, and your thoughts on where we go from here?
Sure. So the way that the 1849 abortion law is stated is that it is a felony for a medical provider to provide an abortion in most circumstances under Wisconsin Statute 940-04. So that's very disturbing, and most people in Wisconsin and across the nation recognize that the choice to have an abortion is between a woman, her faith, her family, and her doctor, and that politicians or legislators should not be intervening or inserting themselves into that private medical decision. And I support medical and reproductive freedom. I think the state's criminal abortion ban, which would provide not only felony charges to a doctor or medical provider, but also put them in jail and charge them with a $10,000 fine, I believe, is not only inappropriate, but it's not in line with what the majority of people in Wisconsin want. And at the end of the day, people support the rights to bodily autonomy and determination. And I think it's important to recognize that both the Attorney General, Josh Call, and Governor Tony Evers filed a direct challenge to Wisconsin's 1849 criminal abortion ban, and that the governor called a special session on a ballot initiative and referendum in Wisconsin for tomorrow, specifically, not just for this issue, but because, kind of getting to your point earlier, the will of the people is not being listened to by the majority of the legislature, right? And so when we have an extreme criminal abortion ban that would jail medical providers for providing an abortion, and think of one example of an ectopic pregnancy or a miscarriage where people are waiting for the lawyer at the hospital to tell the doctor when it is legal for them to perform the medical care that is needed for that person. That, to most people, is something disheartening to hear, that not only is that criminal abortion ban on the books, but it is affecting medical care in Wisconsin as a result, right? And so we want the people of Wisconsin to have the opportunity to have a ballot initiative and referendum in the same way that people in 24 states have it. I've been on this bill for a long time in the legislature, in the same way that I'm also a co-author of a bill to repeal the state's 1849 abortion ban, because I understand that's where the public is, and I support their rights and their access. So the governor is calling a special session tomorrow in the legislature, asking us to vote on a constitutional amendment or proposed amendment to directly allow people to adopt or reject a ballot initiative like other states. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great idea, because not only would we, if we had this law on the books already, not only would we have the freedom to choose and medical and reproductive freedom, we'd also have significant progress on issues like expanding access to health care, expanding access to medical marijuana, probably legalizing cannabis as well. That's where public sentiment is at. And sometimes you need the public involved in government when your legislature or your state government is held captive by gerrymandered maps and what I would call minority rule in some cases, given that they're representing one party, not everybody.
Again, we're talking to Katrina Shanklin, 71st Assembly District Representative here on Bow Falls Radio, WXCO. Touching quickly on the maps, I remember years ago I would talk to Mandy Wright when she was serving in Madison as a state representative from Marathon County, and that was a big issue. Nothing seems to be able to get done because it's all about using the advantage. And the Republicans have used that to their advantage with these maps. And this year, there is a danger of Republicans getting a supermajority in the state legislature. So even if Tony Evers wins re-election, he could face veto-proof majorities on the Republican side. I guess, number one, is there any hope of some fair map legislation coming through in the near future? Number two, what can the Democratic Party do to try to peel some seats away in non-Milwaukee and Madison areas of the state?
Right. So I represent a rural community in Portage County, and I represent everyone, and I tell my constituents that regardless of how you vote, how often you vote, I am here for you, and I think we need to show people first and foremost that there can be legislators who can cut through the obstruction and the divisiveness and get things done. And that's how I've always worked in Portage County. But you're right that, and I've pointed this out multiple times, extreme partisan gerrymandering can certainly create many hurdles that are very difficult for members of the legislature to clear if they're trying in good faith to work with everyone on behalf of their constituents. And so there are opportunities for fair maps. We have introduced legislation to create nonpartisan redistricting through a nonpartisan redistricting commission in the same way that Iowa has, the Iowa model, which has been working successfully since the 80s. The idea is that no politician should have their hands in what their election maps look like. That should be left to people who are using science and math to fairly apportion these maps so that way it's competitive for everyone, regardless of party or incumbency. Everyone has a voice equally, and therefore one person, one vote actually is being taken into account, right? Right now, our maps are very gerrymandered so that some people will, no matter how many times they try to vote for one party, you know, if that community, if that district is 80% the other party, they're going to feel like their voice isn't being heard. And when those lines are manipulated by politicians to give them an advantage distinctly for that purpose, not only does it lead to disenchantment, but it makes people feel like their vote matters and their voice matters even less. And so we see less civic engagement. And so my goal is always to make people understand that they can play a key role here, especially in the upcoming elections. You know, I'm just looking now at CBS 58 has a headline called Republican Supermajority, Real Possibility for Wisconsin Ahead of Midterms. And it is possible. They need 5 seats in the state assembly, and they're 1 seat away from a supermajority in the state senate. And so at the end of the day, people need to consider that seats like mine that are more of a swing district or more of a, you know, a closer district where, look, I listen to everyone and I try my best to represent everyone. That doesn't mean we agree at all times, but it means I'm listening to at all times and I'm doing my best to represent you. If we had more districts like that, we would see more work getting done, right? But if there is a supermajority, which means one party has 2/3 in both houses, they would have the ability to override the governor's veto. So, for example, bills that restrict and undermine reproductive rights and freedoms even further, which the governor has vetoed at least a half dozen, possibly a dozen in the past couple years, those bills would then become law. When the governor usually vetoes something, it means it's not law, it doesn't become law. But if you have a 2/3 vote in both houses of the legislature, a supermajority, you can override that veto and enact it into law. And that's what we're looking at unless we have civic engagement, voter engagement, and getting people out to the polls. And I tell everyone, look, I don't believe in one party ruling everything on all branches of government because that leads to bad ideas and extremism. We need to make sure everyone's voice is heard. And I'll tell you this, working in a legislature that had entirely Republican rule versus a legislature with divided government and Governor Tony Evers, I much prefer divided government where there are checks and balances and an incentive to work together in spite of what some may call partisan obstruction.
More with Katrina Shanklin coming up here on Bow Falls Radio WXCO. Again, Chad Holmes Show here on Bow Falls Radio 98.9 and 1230. WXCBullFallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO 250. Here on this Monday afternoon, again, we are talking to State Representative Katrina Shankland, 71st Assembly District, serving Portage County. And continuing what we were talking about, basically, you're talking about split government. It's a purple state. And as we talked about, the potential for a supermajority for the Republicans. At the same time, you do look at the maps, and it's if you look at the maps, you see a little bit of blue around Portage County, but you see a lot of red elsewhere as we go to northern and western and big parts of Wisconsin. As somebody that is, has experience now, trying to almost a decade in office. When you talk to Democrats, and you said it, you said you serve everybody in your district, but what's the message that you tell Democrats who may be running in rural areas in terms of getting elected? How do you get more Democrats from rural areas in the state legislature?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, if you're running in a rural community, I think it's important to know that sometimes campaigning is different, right? It's showing up to pie socials, stopping at the local diner and taking a look at the community bulletin board and taking photos of all the different events coming up and then going to them and just meeting people where they're at and hanging out, speaking with them in a low-pressure environment. Because I'll tell you this, in many of the towns that I have knocked doors at, people have said, you're the only person and first person to ever come to my door. And that's how I first got elected. I had a rural strategy, and I've never taken a single voter for granted. I've worked really hard, and I think people who are running in rural communities know their community, they know their neighbors, and what I try to do is tell people that we need to be able to speak to each other in a way that is civil and engaging, where we can safely share ideas without criticism, and people react warmly to that concept because we've seen so much division in our community over the years, in our state over the years. And I think giving permission to people to disagree with you early on and saying, I welcome disagreement, I welcome your ideas, I welcome your feedback, that means a lot to a lot of people, because I think, especially with the rise of, and use of social media, people have found their community there and chosen to, block or delete or unfriend those they may disagree with. And that's a choice, that's a personal choice. But at the end of the day, you can't do that at work. You can't do that if you're a legislator. You've got to learn to work with everyone and find ways to agree. And that's what I've tried to do over the years, is sit down with people and say, we may disagree on a few issues, but how can we work together on this one? Because you and I both care deeply about it. And building coalitions that way, being nimble and flexible in your ability to negotiate and have conversations on an issue that might be typically considered controversial, but that needs to be solved. Like, water quality is a great example of that. Part of how I got things done with my colleagues is I came with a menu of ideas and I said, all right, what are yours? Let's compare and let's figure out where we can meet. And I think we need to do that in our communities too, whether it's showing up to local events, farmer appreciation dinners, having local business tours and farm tours. Those are all things that I do, and I would encourage people to consider, just doing that personal level outreach instead of just running cookie cutter ads with talking points on there, because people want to know you're a human being with a soul and you care. And at the end of the day, that's really what matters most, right? You need to demonstrate to others that you are going to be there for them at the end of the day, even and especially when you disagree, you'll be there. And I think that that's a much more important message than anything else these days, when people have been isolated for several years in some cases and are looking to rebuild community.
An issue that should not be controversial is education, and yet it has become exceptionally controversial. It feels like there is a real schism right now, public education and private education. What's your take on the whole education system debate right now?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, and going back to this issue of referenda, right, where we have several different referenda on the ballot in the city of Stevens Point this November, some of which are road projects, and that isn't to increase taxpayer money, just to be clear, but I'm sure some people may be confused by that, and I think what I'm concerned about is the number of referenda on the ballot for basic government services like school districts, like public safety, like in Portage County, our nursing home. And that's not to say referenda are bad. It's to say when the state has the money to support our local governments and school districts, like we do right now, we have a responsibility and a duty to share that revenue, shared revenue. That's what that is, right? We need to send more shared revenue back for school districts as well. So I'm concerned about that because in the last few years, as I meet with school districts to talk about their needs, I know that they have some short-term, one-time federal money to get them through, but when that expires, they're going to be looking at budget deficits again. And at the end of the day, do we want to keep people in their homes? Absolutely. So instead of raising property taxes, which again, we over-rely on in Wisconsin, why can't we send more revenue back to our school districts? And that means having a fair funding formula and a stronger budget. And I know the governor added $100 million in federal funds to the last budget for public schools, but again, that's one-time money. So my preference, first and foremost, is to make sure we are funding our public education system fairly and equitably so every kid who has, you know, the opportunity to go to that public school in their local community has the best possible opportunities in their future as well. And as it relates to voucher schools, I think the biggest thing that needs to be tackled before we do anything else is look at accountability and making sure, you know, anyone who takes public money should be held to the same public standards.
We got about 90 seconds left before we wrap it up as you run for your sixth term in office. It's hard to believe, but, you know, you're still one of the younger members in the state legislature. What kind of perspective are you able to get as one of the younger members in your party and in the assembly that maybe need what that issues or ideas that need to be talked about? Anything in particular that your generation and your perspective can help you in terms of looking ahead in the state of Wisconsin?
Absolutely. This might be a non-traditional answer, but I'll say I've been underestimated very frequently, and I think that that is an asset to be underestimated because it means when people have expectations of me not being able to get results, and then I do, people remember that. So I've outworked my colleagues. I'm very scrappy, and when it comes to issues like student loan debt or home ownership or entrepreneurship, I do have that experience of graduating in 2009, the worst economy since the Great Depression at that time. And so that when I first campaigned, that was the story that I shared. But I'll say this, as a young woman in the legislature, I have been underestimated for a long time. And that motivates me further. It makes me work even harder. And it has incentivized me and spurred me to create long-lasting relationships with people from all walks of life. And I greatly cherish that and appreciate the opportunity to serve the wonderful people of Portage County.
Outstanding. Really enjoy talking to you, Representative Shankland. Best of luck as you continue in your campaign heading to November 8th, and best of luck in terms of getting some of those issues talked about and hopefully passed in the near future. But again, really appreciate your time, and hopefully we can talk again sometime soon.
I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for having me.
And that's going to wrap things up today. Devil's Advocates coming up next right after CBS News. Here on Beaufalls Radio, 98.9 and 1230, BeaufallsRadio.com, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WX.